Welcome to the Pop Culture Radio Show. This is a one-hour show that goes out on Kilburn to Kensal Radio once a month. This is the podcast version, so we had to take out all the music. And this month we had a particularly enjoyable selection of country music classics to go along with it. But what we do is we explore some obscure, specific little corner of pop culture through the eyes of a special guest each month. And this month, that is Francesca Pescia, talking about Dolly Parton. This weekend just gone, was the Glastonbury Festival, which I almost entirely ignored on the basis that I do every year, where they refuse to let me have a ticket, so fuck them, I'll just ignore them. But what even I couldn't ignore was the fact that the biggest hit of the festival wasn't Metallica, it wasn't Arcade Fire. The biggest hit of the festival came on at 5 p.m. on the Sunday, and was Dolly Parton, who attracted a bigger crowd than any of the headliners, than Kasabian, who moaned that they should have been the headliners. No, the headliner, quite clearly, empirically, should have been Dolly Parton. You may have noticed that she'd been all over the newspapers, all the broadsheets loved her glorious, glittering, shining, tasseled visage. It's been all over the newspapers for today. So, joining me on the Pop Culture Radio Show this month is Francesca Pescia. Hello, Francesca.
Hello.
And you have many achievements, one of which, I think chief of which, is putting up with me as your housemate. I say this as I'm quaffing your wine. So you very recently went to see Dolly Parton in concert in Liverpool. What is Dolly Parton like as a concert experience?
Yes, as you said, I'm your housemate, and among other things, I edit an academic arts journal, and I'm currently doing my PhD in theatre design. But above all of these things, I am a country music obsessive fan whose lifelong dream is to make the pilgrimage to Dollywood and ride in a roller coaster with Dolly Parton's face on it. I don't think there can be anything better.
And this is something that actually exists. That should be pointed out. It isn't a fever dream you had once.
No,
this exists.
Dolly Parton, Dolly World exists in the Kentucky Smoky Mountains. Something I will never forgive my parents for. Everyone has their sort of parental trauma. Mine is that they stood outside the gates of Dollywood and didn't go in. Didn't even bring me back a t-shirt. They could have stood next to the genuine coat of many colours, but they didn't. So, yes, I went to see Dolly in Liverpool a few weeks ago, which worked out cheaper to go all the way to Liverpool and stay in a Premier Inn than it would have been to see her about 20 rows further back at the O2. The first thing about Dolly is something that I think a lot of these young stars could definitely learn too from today, is she's the... Above all, she is a professional. This is someone who's been gigging since they were 11 years old.
And she is 68.
She is 68 years old, so she's got 5 decades of performing behind her.
So no wonder she could win over a crowd that largely would only know a couple of her songs. Of course, she can absolutely get them jumping around.
Well, I wouldn't say that they would only... I think people would have gone to that crowd. Several people in that crowd would have gone thinking they only know a couple of Dolly Parton songs. But I think a lot of people don't realise what song she's written.
Well, the Whitney Houston one is a classic.
I think quite a lot of people don't know she wrote Islands in the Stream.
Mm. I was assuming that was Kermit the Frog.
Yeah. And a lot of her other... massive hits. I mean, obviously there's 9 to 5 is the huge anthem, but things like Old Flames Can't Hold a Candle to You and Because I Am a Woman, these are massive hits that a lot of people are growing up with, but they wouldn't necessarily know that Dolly Parton sung them first. And so first of all, as I was saying, she is the ultimate professional. Dolly Parton said she's playing at 8, she's on at 8 p.m, she's off at 10:30 p.m. There's none of this disappearing for half an hour between curtain calls. She introduces all of her bands, she talks to her audience, she responds to the different crowds. I mean, at Glastonbury, she played a song she wrote that morning about mud in a response to Glastonbury, and that she got all the audience to write with her. And the other thing that people, I think, forget about her is she's an incredible musician. I mean, over her set in Liverpool, she played the banjo, the gospel organ, the saxophone, I've forgotten what it's called, but it's that sort of country harp that looks a bit like a sitar. It's got a specific name.
Oh, I know what you mean, but I can't remember.
One of those.
Yes.
The electric guitar, the acoustic guitar. She plays the piano, she plays the violin. She played the harmonica. She did. Apparently, she's going to be bringing out an album of Dolly Does Dylan, of Bob Dylan covers.
I'd love that.
And she did a cover of "Don't Think Twice, It's All Right,"
yeah,
where she plays the harmonica. I'd say as good, if not better, than Dylan. So you have to remember that this is a woman with incredible musical talent above anything else.
Yeah, just continue to hone her craft for 50 years, just constantly. And she's, you know, had hits in every decade. Many of her contemporaries have just kind of faded away, and her 90s weren't necessarily a good period for her, but she's come back with what's considered to be some of her best music in the last
decade. Remember during the 90s, she was busy getting nominated for 2 Oscars.
Well,
for
yeah.
Steel Magnolias and for The Bodyguard, for Best Original Song.
Yeah.
But Dolly Parton as well. I think the reason Dolly Parton has stood the test of time compared to other groundbreakers of her generation, like Loretta Lynn, Tanya Tucker, even poor old Tammy Wynette. Of course, Tammy Wynette died when she was 55, so I think that was the very early 90s. But I mean, I think the reason she is more timeless and more appealing is she's adapted with every decade. So if you look at Dolly Parton in the 60s, when she was collaborating with Porter Wagoner and that very young, fresh face, fresh off the mountains, she was making this whole thing about her. And so many of the country music stars at that time were trying to be something they weren't. And Dolly Parton was there, here I am, proper hillbilly girl from the mountains with this self-deprecating humour, singing the songs people wanted to hear, the old gospel hits, the old moral songs. I mean, people have forgotten things now, like the Cheapskate Roll Take Accident, which was a massive hit in the early 60s, about a wagon crash. And it's a moral story of the person was having an affair. Or the classic Genie's Afraid of the Dark. Poor old Genie. Apparently she's not going to live long because her dad had an immoral marriage and then she dies. I think we should bring back these songs where people talk in the middle and tell you a moral story. But she went from that to 70s disco with things like Baby I'm Burning. And then 80s pop and then 90s pop. She's come back in the 2000s with sort of girl power anthems that everyone wants to sing along and feel empowered by. She adapts to each generation.
Yeah, and I think certainly the modern music audience is one that has the full wealth of all of music available to them. So, I mean, I can't imagine what that set on Glastonbury has done for her British record sales, which I'm sure were steady, but she'll have had a massive spike just for in between the BBC coverage and just people in the fields downloading stuff, and they can go right back to her. It's not just the best of, they can go right back to her early stuff. They can pick up anything that was on that set and buy it.
I think they said in the coverage she sold over 10 million records.
Yeah. What? Ever?
Ever.
I heard of something like 100 million.
Ooh, add a zero.
Ten million's not even, not for, yeah, over 50 years, that's entirely.
But it does seem amazing. You think it's 2014 and there's this woman who, okay, yes, we now live in the sort of fame age, but here's a girl who was one of 12 children, grew up in a shack in the Kentucky mountains, and here she is playing to, we were trying to guesstimate it, there must have been 20,000 people in that field.
Oh.
Of British people who know who she is and know who all these songs are.
Again, add a zero. It would be
again, add a zero.
Like Glastonbury is around 250,000, and if she's beat the headliners, then we are talking about like around 200,000 people in that field. Some of them have just been passing through. I've not been to Glastonbury for a long time, but if you've not got anything you particularly want to see, you just kind of circle around until something catches you, and you can't help but walk past the main stage. And I can imagine the amount of people that just got, oh, I'll just watch 5 minutes of this just so I can say I went to see Dolly Parton, and then an hour later they were clapping and cheering and crying.
I think a lot of people probably went as well in a kind of cynical, oh, this will be a laugh.
Well, there's always a kind of semi-novelty act with, I feel a bit bad mentioning him since he was convicted today, but Rolf Harris used to be that. To an extent, James Brown was.
Bruce Forsyth, they had 1 year, didn't they?
Yeah, and last year in the same slot they had Kenny Rogers, which is why I think they thought it was safe to put a country star there. And Kenny Rogers struggled to connect apparently that year with an audience that didn't know much of his stuff, whereas Dolly has absolutely dominated the whole festival. She's there's always someone that breaks out from Glastonbury that has the best Glastonbury, and this year improbably. It's not the latest indie darling. It's Dolly Parton. That's, you know, it's a real testament to her skill.
I think we are seeing a resurgence, though, in country music and the new appreciation of country music. It's no longer... I mean, I've loved country for far too long, when it was definitely not cool to like country music. And I... Well, I've never been ashamed to say what I like anyway, but it seems to be now that... And I guess it must be something to do with the Carrie Underwoods and programmes like Nashville and even Taylor Swift, that it's not this niche white Americana thing anymore. That it's people are seeing that country... Lots of rock music has its roots in country.
Well, it's been described as... It used to be described with a bit of a snigger, but as white man's blues. But I think in recent times, this idea of roots music and going back to the kind of early stages of where modern music comes from, like for a long time, certainly in the 90s, country music, the stuff that we got anyway, was this uber cheesy kind of, not even Americana, but just kind of southern saccharine crap.
Jesus, take the wheel.
Or you know, how do I live without you?
Oh, don't knock Shania. Love a bit of Shania.
Is that the Anne Rhymes? Anyway.
She's rubbish. You can knock her, but not Shania.
But this idea that you can go again because of the vast wealth of stuff you can just get on iTunes or through the naughty internet tubes or whatever, you can go right the way back to the early stuff. I think so, and some of it is just like there's a Johnny Cash biopic which reminded people that hey, this was rock and roll at one point, country music, and the early stuff where these kind of moral tales, it's the same principle, the blues, you're talking about stories.
That's that thing, it was always meant to be that if hip hop is all about what you've got, that I'm sitting here with my magnum of champagne and all of my bitches and all of my nice things, the blues are the opposite of I haven't even got a shoe. Everything's gone horribly wrong. I walked along the road, met the devil, everything went bad. But people forget as well exactly what you were saying, that country musicians were the rock stars of their day. I mean, they were scandalous. You look at people like Tanya Tucker, they were absolutely rock and roll, out there, drug taking, alcohol. Tammy Wynette got divorced 5 times, which is ironic from a woman who sang Stand By Your Man. But going back slightly, you were saying that the roots of a lot of music in country music. There was a thing recently, that song Timber by Kesha and Pitbull.
Oh, yeah.
That was a massive hit. They completely stole the riff off an old country song, and they're now being sued for £3 million.
Wow. Well, fair play.
I think it was it's called the San Francisco Blues, I think. If you listen to the two songs together, completely stole the riff.
But I mean, something that for me, someone who's like written off country for a long time, with the Johnny Cash biopic with Joaquin Phoenix, there's the bit where you see them on the Sun Tour, and you see Elvis and Jerry Lee Lewis, and you go, oh yeah, really kind of cool, pioneering blues musicians. But oh no, they're on the same tour with Johnny Cash. And you kind of go, actually, this wasn't necessarily this separation. I think as music and pop music has developed, these things have kind of splintered off into their own distinct areas. But there was a time when this was all just kind of exciting young person music. And people with stories to tell and people that could, you know, tear up a stage. And I think for me, just the uber produced pop country, I think when I was young was the only thing you ever heard. When I was a young man. Whereas Dolly has been there the whole time. She was there when it was Roots. She was there when it was the moral story. She was there when she was picking up disco, and she was there when it was uber produced, and that means that she can, you know, go back to any of those periods in her life and pull from that well.
Country's always been controversial as well. If you look at artists like Loretta, who came slightly before Dolly, I mean, for anyone who doesn't know, Loretta Lynn was a country musician, 60s, 70s, who suffered from very bad drug addiction and became a bit of a recluse in later life. But she was 14 years old when she started recording. She got married at 14 and went to Nashville. And she had songs such as Pregnant Again and songs like Don't Come Home A-Drinking with Lovin' On Your Mind, which is basically about domestic violence and someone with a drink problem. They were very controversial songs for the time. Tanya Tucker sang Delta Dawn, which was famously then covered by Helen Reddy later on and became an anthem for feminists anyway, everywhere. But people forget, Tanya Tucker sung that song first about a woman who is defiled and abandoned and left by the man and seen as ruined. That these weren't nice southern girls singing about... These were honky-tonk angels. These were not girls singing about getting married and, you know, baking a nice country ham. It's a lot darker than that.
Well, the thing that you always have to remember as well with these kind of moralistic tales, it's easy to think about them in terms of, oh, well, you know, Southern Christian right. But the fact is, if you're talking about these songs, which are like the 60s, and obviously there's a tradition there that goes back before then, before the 60s, the idea of there being, freely available contraception is socially basically it just wasn't there for people in these communities. So it's not about you shouldn't have sex because sex is bad. You shouldn't have sex because of the risks open to you, which is the kind of thing that...
Well, they were expected to have lots and lots of sex with their husbands and have as many children as possible.
And it's not moralistic, but it's not moralistic because it's like you're bad if you have sex. You're moralistic because men will treat you badly and they will run off. And that's the story. It's not...
That's the whole theme of the song, Because I'm a Woman, the whole central line of that, of my crimes aren't any worse than yours because I'm a woman. And that when men look to get married, they look for a saint. That's incredibly groundbreaking at the time. It helped something like... I mean, Tammy Wynette came in for a lot of bashing from the feminist movement in the 70s for songs like Stand By Your Man, and she was seen as a doormat. But actually, beyond that, these women were incredibly savvy businesswomen for the time, that they knew what they were doing. And I don't think Stand By Your Man is a sexist song. It's all about sort of battling through the adversities and when it's tough, you know, having that confidence to stand next to them and go, no, I'm going to back them up. I might beat the hell out of them in private, but I wouldn't shame them in public. And I think that could be Stand By Your Woman, it could be Stand By Your Family, it could be Stand By Your Kids. It's the same message. Dolly, I mean, there's been a lot of press that I am quite uncomfortable with that is so fixated on the fact she's got massive tits or the fact how she looks.
Well, and it was the Daily Star, as I say, there's a lot of headlines. I think they thought they were being nice, but it was Dolly gets her big hits out. At Glastonbury, which is like, oh god.
I mean, one thing she's always been brilliant at is, and she's admitted, Dolly's always been able to make men do what she wants, for want of a better term. This is a direct quote from her, that being in a very sort of in the masculine patriarchal world of Nashville at that time, she had to be quite manipulative and use her feminine wiles to get on the shows and things that she did. What was great, actually, in Liverpool, part of her patter, which is that people say I slept my way to the top, but I've only ever slept with people that I wanted to. That's not saying she didn't sleep around. It's a completely different sentence. But Dolly is so much more than the fact she's got big boobs. It's not actually relevant to anything she's achieved or done.
I think the cosmetic surgery is something that comes up a lot, and she's got a certain amount of stick from it from sort of feminist quarters, but I think they're sort of missing the point. Partly, she's completely open about it. There's no fiction there. She's not pretending to be something. She's just sort of done it, and she jokes about it. Like someone said that, I was trying to find the quote just then. It was in one of the articles I pulled up where someone said, "Dolly, you always look so happy," and she says, "Oh, that's just the Botox, dear." And this is like,
or
a little...
If I have one more facelift, I'll have a beard.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's you know, she completely owns that.
Well, she also says she modelled her look as from when she was young on the local hookup. Because also, bearing in mind where she grew up, there wasn't a lot of glamour icons to look up to. And she also said that if you looked just your average girl, you were sort of roughhoused around by the boys, but actually the way she looked, guys were intimidated by her.
Yeah.
And it's almost like an armour, I think, that she puts on. I mean, she's got a lovely song that I love called Backwards Barbie, where she says, well, you judge me by having giant hair, but this is just what a country idea, girl's idea of glamour is. That's what we grow up looking at. Actually, it's not that different if you look at the girls and things like The Only Way Is Essex and stuff that look like strange airbrushed versions of celebrities that have completely modelled their look on glamour models and red carpet that they feel they look great. And I am very wary in I do believe that feminism, fourth wave feminism, is too permissive. I don't think lap dancing is empowering. I don't think it ever will be empowering. And I don't think every choice that you make is a good choice and an inherent feminist choice because you made it. At the same time, not every choice is to do with feminism. You have Weetabix as the activist Finn McKay, who, if you don't follow her on Twitter, you really should go and follow her. She is fantastic. Feminist activist Finn McKay said that, "I had Weetabix for breakfast this morning. That's not an inherent feminist choice. I just felt like it." In the same way, what you choose to look like and what you choose to model yourself on is nobody else's goddamn business. And I'm very wary, even in subjects that I feel strongly about, such as prostitution and lap dancing, that of women telling other women what to do in feminism, because I feel that potentially just misses the point.
There's also potentially an element of slut shaming, which is almost the opposite of permissiveness, because there's the permissiveness, but there's also, but you can't look like you're being permissive. You're allowed to do what you want, sleep around as much as you want, but you're not actually allowed to look like you might sleep around as much as you want. And the big boobs and the big lips are all kind of the arguably this cartoon version of what a woman should look like, which you're not allowed to do, but you are allowed to apparently have all the sex that would imply. So it's, I sort of feel like it's...
If it's genuinely your choice, I mean, if you look at someone like Dolly, who's worth, I think she was quoted at the time, she's worth over about $3 billion, something crazy, that she's just got more money than she could ever use.
Well, if she sold 100 million albums...
Plus Dollywood.
Plus Dollywood.
Plus all the films.
I think it's pretty reasonable to suggest she's got at least $3 from each of those albums. Therefore, there's $300 million if she's invested that wisely over 50 years.
Which she will have, because she's Dolly.
then you know.
Plus she earned £1 million off I Will Love You, Always Love You.
Well, yeah, alone. I mean that probably more than anything else will be constantly chaining its way into her bank account.
There was a lovely bit in her set where she was like, "I don't mind people think Whitney wrote the song because I make all the money." The same thing of Jolene, of course, is based on a true story. She's like, "I think of that little redhead girl, Jolene, and I think you made me so much money. I don't even mind you came onto my husband anymore."
Well, I can't remember if it was at Glastonbury, but one of her sets recently, one of the articles was saying she'd rewritten it to basically say, "Jolene, please take him out."
Yeah, I see him now. He's got grey hair and he's asleep in his chair. You can come on now, Jolene. But yes, those choices, anything to do with that sort of plastic surgery or that extreme makeup, as long as you're... I mean, look at Dolly. She's not stupid. She's done exactly what she wants to do with her life. If that's what she wants, it's what she wants. But it's when that is seen as your only thing that's valuable about you that it becomes a problem. When you're not wanting to leave the house without your false eyelashes and you don't have anything else in your life, that's when I think we have to be concerned about image in that way. Or you feel pressurised into... You feel that you have to have a boob job to be normal. It's when it's normalised from. But Dolly Parton, I think, has done the reversal of normalise it. She's a cartoon character. It's a bit like looking at Pete Burns. Nobody wants to look at Pete Burns and goes, "They all think that's a good idea."
Well, I think... And I was thinking when we were talking at the beginning of this set that actually a good comparator equivalent of Dolly Parton, and I think there's only a handful of people that fit that kind of thing, would be Prince. And you expect Prince to turn up looking like Prince. So that means ludicrous hair, tiny moustache, thin as a rake, cheekbones, and this is a man in his 50s now. And so you kind of think, has he had work? I don't know. Probably has. Whereas you would be disappointed to see Prince in baggy jeans and an old Pixies t-shirt.
But you don't go out and dress like Prince. It's not the same thing. Well, icons. They look different from us.
Yeah, and an icon, especially if you've been an icon for decades, you, to an extent, you're trapped by it. But nevertheless, you're very lucratively trapped by it. And that's part of the bargain that you make if you're going to be that kind of, you know, if you're going to live that kind of life, is that you always, if you're leaving the house, have to, because there'll be a paparazzi somewhere, you have to look like some version of that. And so, you know, with her, the big boobs and her, you know...
Wigs. She had a rhinestoned wig on.
Again,
I have never wanted anything so much in my life.
Rhinestone wig.
Sod the PhD, get me a rhinestoned wig.
Well, you know, exactly. So she knows what people expect. She plays up to it. There may well be an off-duty Dolly. I don't want to see that.
There is an off-duty Dolly. I mean, famously, she goes to write her songs in a wooden cabin on her own and fast for 3 days because it gets her back into being poor hillbilly mode.
Yeah, you know, I've just had this image in my head of her going out with a knife, slaying a grizzly bear with just a small knife.
I bet she could.
Dragging it back, skinning it, leaving out the liver, ladies and gentlemen, because that's poisonous, but then subsisting off that bear for...
Evidently, have never had the pleasure of watching Dolly Parton's Smoky Mountain Christmas special. I have a copy of this DVD. It was not easy to find that it would play on an English DVD player. And it's a Christmas special from the 90s where Dolly Parton helps children lost in the woods of Kentucky, where she sort of appears like this big busty good fairy in sequins. And they go and save all the critters from the mountain snow, and then they gather around the fire and sing Christmas songs. And that's just what I want to happen every Christmas. I am very sad that we don't have Dolly Parton instead of Santa. I think that would be better.
Well, it's comforting to know that if you have any children, that they will not get presents from Santa, they'll get
they will
Dolly
get
Parton.
Presents from Dolly Parton.
And there'll be rhinestones. Whether that toy comes in rhinestones or not, the package will be carefully prized
open. I think as
open.
We saw from her Glastonbury set where every single instrument was bejeweled, you can rhinestone anything if you have the determination.
So, one of the reasons why this was in my mind, even before the Dolly Parton Glastonbury set, was because Francesca sent me some very, very irate messages about a Radio 4 Woman's Hour feature on Dolly Parton. Would you like to enlighten us about what was awful about this?
Well, it was a feature that they did that, for a start, was infuriatingly entitled Can Dolly Parton Be Considered a Feminist Icon? Which, just as a title, annoyed me from the start.
Well, if the answer is yes and here's why... That's...
And to a certain extent, that was what they were trying to discuss in the programme, that why. But there was still this underlying, which I think is very true of Woman's Hour in general at the moment, and I have written many irate letters about this, of mockery, of taking the mick of this, she isn't one of us.
Mm.
And there was a woman on, I forget her name, but she wrote the book Pilgrimage to Dollywood, and like me, that was her long-term dream, to go to Dollywood. And Jenny Murray's question to her was, you're a serious academic, why do you have a poster of Dolly Parton in your office? And that to me was the most asinine woman insulting another woman. A woman who has made so much more money than you, Jenny Murray! Stupid question, and I don't feel that we should even be having that discussion. It's not a helpful discussion. Why can't we just celebrate it? And this, excuse me for getting this woman's name written in this book, but her comeback to me was brilliant. She said, well, she's a much better role model than Euripides.
Well, that's it. Of all the things that an academic might have on the wall, George Orwell, Karl Marx, you know, Dolly Parton comparatively is a pretty good role model. So let's dispel a few things. We've mentioned that maybe because I'm a woman wasn't a Dolly composition. I think there's an assumption, and maybe it's a sexist assumption about women, especially women in pop, especially who, you know, from an age where most women in pop were largely taken advantage of. There's an assumption that she just...
I wouldn't say pop, I'd say in country. I think in pop music in the 60s you were seeing quite an exciting time, but country was still very patriarchal.
Well, exciting time, but then there would usually be a man at the back somewhere, usually Phil Spector. And so... By the way, I should explain, if you've been hearing a strange low rumbling noise, it isn't a train, it isn't a plane going overhead as it was in the Sydney special. This is our cat, Ditty, also known as The Knight. who is incredibly happy sitting in Chesky's lap. You may not be able to hear it, but yeah, no one's hungry. It's not a steamroller going past. It's just a very content cat. But Dolly, throughout her career, has primarily been her main songwriter. She's not afraid to take a good song from someone else, but she largely writes her own music. She is completely in control in a way that very few pop stars are of her own business dealings.
Well, famously, Elvis wanted to sing I Will Always Love You, which was she'd written in the 60s as part of the Porter Wagoner show. And if anyone hasn't Googled the Porter Wagoner show, go stop listening. Go and do that now. Go and Google Porter Wagoner.
Pause listening.
And then go and watch Porter Wagoner.
And then come back.
Because you have to understand, all of the big country stars, Tammy, Loretta, Tanya, even Johnny Cash, they all started on the Porter Wagoner show, which was the most lo-fi show you've ever seen, with people sitting on hay bales with no teeth singing country songs. It is wonderful, wearing sparkly jackets. And Dolly Parton wrote I Will Always Love You and sung it for the first time on the Porter Wagoner show. And Elvis said, I'd like to have that song. And Dolly Parton said no, because his management demanded half the royalties. What person at that point, when they were still emergent in their career, said no to Elvis?
Well, more importantly, said no to Colonel Tom Parker, who was... And it's interesting to bring up Elvis, because he is very much, you know, came up around their contemporaries when she first came out, you know, her and Elvis were around about each other. Elvis had no control at all over his career. Tom Parker told him what to do, when to go to the toilet, what songs he was going to do, what films he was going to do, and he did what he was told.
As much as the little pipsqueak of terror has no comparable talent, but Elvis was as manufactured as Justin Bieber.
Yeah, I mean...
He just had talent, that was the difference.
Well, that is very much the difference. But yeah, whereas he gets a lot more kind of artistic credibility than Dolly, despite the fact that Dolly wrote vastly more of her songs.
Dolly's written over 1,000 songs. And especially that early period, the 60s and 70s, she was incredibly prolific.
And just she made deals about her future and about her royalties and about her, you know, where all that was going, that very few musicians at all, let alone female musicians, were ever capable, even now, capable of ironing out, because she knew her worth, she knew her talent, and she absolutely grabbed it with both hands.
Yeah, definitely. And again, where does that kind of confidence come from? You know, this is a girl who started at 17 singing on the television. She just inherently had it in her that she could do it, that she knew she could do it, and that she had the talent. And there, you know, you do see that nowadays in the confidence stars. I mean, Nashville is a very different place now. But that songwriting skill, and to keep possession of your own songs, I mean, most people that seem to have that kind of skill end up now writing songs for other people, not holding on to their own material like that.
Well, it's worth...
It is a shame, I think, that we don't get to hear much old Dolly, some of those really early songs, which I think, personally, have stood the test of time. My manager at work doesn't think they've served the test of time. She wants me to stop playing them because she finds them quite irritating.
But she likes power ballads.
Oh, she really does.
And Dolly's got loads of power ballads.
Well, she likes 80s power ballads, which sound really bad coming third hand through someone else's headphones.
Fair enough. If you watched any Glastonbury, if you've got a hankering for some old school, powerful country women, Loretta Lynn is another good person to go back with.
And also worth watching the film, The Coal Miner's Daughter, where she is portrayed by Sissy Spacek, which is just an absolutely stunning bit of filming. We're all set in the old Kentucky mountains, but has all the music in it, really brings home what these queens of country achieved. Also has a guest spot from Patsy Cline in it as well.
Excellent.
Stunning film, worth seeing. But Loretta, I think, is very overlooked now in popular culture for what she achieved. She, for me, is actually in front of Dolly in feminist ideals of what she was promoting, what she was talking about, how controversial she was. But she hasn't stood the popular culture test of time, same as Dolly. And she had some amazing dresses. It's worth watching just for the dresses. Well, they're saying that I need that rhinestone suit. If I ever get married, I am having a rhinestone Dolly Parton suit. I might just have one when I get my PhD. Just walk around in it.
Or if you just need to get some milk.
Once I get it, I'll just wear it all the time.
Okay, great. Now, I, as I was saying, didn't watch any Glastonbury.
Because you're bitter and twisted that you weren't there.
I'm incredibly bitter.
Whilst I cannot understand why anyone would want to be there, when you could watch it from many different angles, on your bed, with a glass of wine, in close proximity to a lovely clean bathroom. And if you fancy it, some cheese. I don't understand the appeal. Great for everyone who does. But even, I couldn't believe when I was watching on TV how far away you are from the stage, even if you're in the front row. You've got to look after all those security people and paps and things.
There's a good 40 feet. And it's one of the reasons why, like, stadium gigs in general are rubbish. Apart from and there's only, again, it's a discussion for a different day, but there's only a handful of bands which can really properly fill a stadium and make it feel intimate, despite the fact that it's, you know, despite the fact that it's huge.
Well, it's interesting as well, I've never been to Glastonbury, but I've been to the Isle of Wight Festival and Bestival, and the bands that I've most enjoyed are bands that I wouldn't necessarily have ever bought an album from. Coldplay live, brilliant. Snow Patrol live, brilliant. Snow Patrol on CD, no, thank you.
I mean, the thing with Glastonbury as well is that if you go there for the headliners, then on the main stage, headliners are for the people who don't really know how to get the most out of Glastonbury, because there's loads of stages. Even when I last time it was a decade ago, when it was a good 100,000 people smaller, and there's all these like small stages, all these strange cabaret areas. There's Healing Fields, there's the Hippie Fields, there's all these kind of areas, and that's all and theatre and performing arts, and all that has just increased in the last decade. So quite frankly, if you're the person who is willing to sit through 8 hours of bands you don't care about just so you can be there for the band that you do like, then you've really misspent your money going to Glastonbury. And look, I've just really,
but also you have to consider that the best bands at these kind of festivals are the bands with their headlining or they're in the legend spot, like Dolly. What Dolly did so well at Glastonbury and was different to when I saw her in Liverpool is they recognise that what the fans are here to watch. So Dolly sang a little bit of the new album, she did a melody of really old hits, and then she blasted the hell out of 9 to 5, Islands in the Stream, I Will Always Love You, Coat of Many Colours, but Baby I'm Burning and Jolene, because that's what people wanted to listen to. I'll never forget going to the Isle of Wight Festival and seeing Lou Reed. And Lou Reed did not sing Satellite of Love, Walk on the Wild Side, or Perfect Day.
If you'd done Perfect Day, like, based on that medley Comet Relief version that was done years ago, he'd have absolutely stormed it.
Everyone, he sung everything off a new album that no one had heard of, that we all sort of stood there going, that's not Lou Reed. But what was brilliant about that, I really enjoyed, was Coldplay then came on, and I will forever, for all his unconscious, uncoupling, alpha sprout-eating ways, love Chris Martin for coming on stage with the lyrics to Perfect Day evidently having just been printed out and put in his hand, and him going, well, I think this is what you actually want to hear, and singing all of the Lou Reed songs, and not playing them particularly well, because I really get the impression they'd only learnt them that afternoon.
I would love a festival where every band covered the hits of the previous band. So you couldn't play your own. You just had to play the best known hits of whoever was on.
That's the other lovely thing about festivals, I think, is when you get unusual combinations. So yes, Coldplay singing Lou Reed, or I was lucky enough to see the Rolling Stones sing with Amy Winehouse, and that was pretty amazing. And Paolo Nutini was there as well, but Paolo Nutini proper had this look on his face of, I shouldn't be here, I've just wandered on, these guys are legends, everything's amazing in my life. Now he's quite grumpy, isn't he? But he was very happy then.
Yeah, well, you know, we're all grumpy sometimes. So what was your Glastonbury television festival highlights?
Apart from obviously Dolly exalt and may her name be exalted. London Grammar, really liked them. They were fantastic.
I really like her voice. I like that it's beautiful. It's weirdly deep, whilst still being a tiny, skinny blonde girl. And that just, there's something about that that just. But anytime you get someone singing pop songs that hasn't got an actual pop voice, that's, it just gets to me, you know. It's just that a little bit more surprising.
It's almost like something like Massive Attack, where it's a voice you don't expect singing on that tune, yeah. But it's so almost ethereal. The other ones that were really good, I really liked Jack White. I was surprised how much I enjoyed Arcade Fire. Mm. I didn't think I'd like that. That's almost like watching a cult. There's so many of them.
Oh, seriously, the first time I saw them at Leeds Festival when they were on the cusp of getting massive, and one of those situations where you know bands get massive because they're massively too big for the stage that they're at, because it was in a tent. And it was back when like half of them would be literally climbing up the scaffolding and one would put a helmet on, the other one would hit him with drumsticks. And like you said, like a cult, but like a cult you'd actually want to join.
You wanted to join Arcade Fire. You're like, there's... I also like when they were interviewed how excited they were.
Yeah.
That they were in a good mood.
Well, that's it. They were a band.
And Khalees, of course. Oh, yeah. I am a big Khalees fan, and you forget until she sings how many brilliant songs she's got. I was really disappointed by Lana Del Rey and MIA. I thought, who I love both of them, and they were dreadful live. MIA looked like some drunk woman who wandered on stage, and there was a guy. Seriously, if you haven't watched the MIA performance, it is worth looking up on iPlayer just to look at the guy who looks like Bez from the Happy Mondays, who does not look like he should be there. There's two girls who are both incredible dancers who are singing backing. Quite a lot of it is mimed. And then there's this Bez guy in the corner. You're like, why is he... I just kept getting distracted. I couldn't concentrate. I was watching Bez. Lana Del Rey looked incredibly bored, only outbored possibly by the complete ennui of the audience. And smoking on stage, love. Not rock and roll. Just looked a bit trashy, really. Mm. Wasn't... Not in a good way. I like trashy. I'm all for the trashabilly. But if you can't be happy on stage at Glastonbury...
Yeah.
I think you may as well stay home. And as David Mitchell would say, put on a tweed jacket, watch Star Trek. It's all right. You don't have to be there.
And on that note, we're going to wrap it up. Thanks again to Francesca Pesce for coming to talk to us so entertainingly about Dolly Parton and all of the other fabulously colourful figures of country music. The Pop Culture Radio Show will be with you again next month. Don't know what we're going to be talking about yet. But if you're not already, why not come and look us up on social networking, on Facebook, on Twitter, on Tumblr. We're all over the shop. Just Google search. I'm not going to read out URLs. That just doesn't make sense. But search for Pop Culture Radio Show. Search for P Cult Radio in some cases. But yeah, I hope you'll join us next month.